This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another current episode of the Doxcast. I am your co-host, Josh Trumbo, and with me, as always, is the convincing Rich Early. Rich, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. It's a weird day. We haven't done a block of podcasts for a while, and to our Doxcast regulars, we thoroughly apologize. We know we have missed a couple weeks. Josh and I were doing everything in our power to meet over some lunches and keep it strung along. Hopefully this will be the, you know, putting our feet back in the ground and just saying, nope, we're going to get these blocks done so we can get these Monday podcasts out.
That's right, so taking our heads out of the ground and our feet back into it.
Yeah.
And continuing on. Yes, it's been busy. You guys have heard. We've talked about it before, all the stuff going on at the shop. And now we're past Free Comic Book Day. Still lots of big stuff coming up, but I think October is going to be our next really, really big push.
Yeah, internally we're starting something tomorrow we call the Four Basic Food Groups that has six things in it. So yeah. Don't ask.
Well, isn't that like the usual food pyramid? It's like how many basic food groups, and then they're like, eh, I guess sugar's in the top there, just a little bit. Right. Can't trust those pyramids.
tell them what the Doxcast is and why we're here.
So the Doxcast is a weekly podcast, usually, hopefully back on track with that, as we've been saying, where we get together and we talk about all sorts of various nerdy things. A lot of it has to do with stuff going on at the store. We also, as we're able to get guests in here and guests via the internet to talk about board games, comic books, Magic the Gathering, all sorts of stuff as it pertains to all of us geeks and nerds. And tonight is no exception to that. We're starting off with a podcast here that delves into current comic books. And we thought it'd be a fun way to introduce you to some of these comics by finding out what Rich's top books are and then having me mercilessly grill him and have him convince me to pick up these comic books. What would make me want to read them?
You see, so, Josh, you're the surrogate for the listener.
That's right.
You're the stand-in.
I'm the everyman.
Yeah. Two comments. One, you know, the podcast, you know, missing a couple weeks compared to, we started in 2011, so we've been going for 8 years. We're pushing 300 episodes, you know, 270-ish or whatever. Yep. I mean, that's pretty darn good. You know, I don't know how many podcasts are out there in the world that are on episode 270. You know, we already got to be in, you know, the top 10% on, you know, or something like that. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, so our listenership is what it is because this is mainly a podcast for and about the store, so it can be four different podcasts in the same month. You know, you might be a board gamer, and then the next week it's about Magic, and the next week it's about comics, or, you know, things like that. We get that. I get it, you know, but you know, here we are. We're still doing it, so.
Absolutely. Well, it's
more
nice
product
and
placement.
That's right. We're also fishing really hard to get some sweet sponsorship deals from various corporations and companies.
But yeah, you know, so we haven't done a straight-up comic podcast for a while. We do our weekly comic show.
Right.
But we haven't done our... Yep, exactly. And so, but this is good old Jed Brazier high, but good old actually do a podcast. So, there you go.
Well, and this is a good way to also introduce or reintroduce the idea of the comic show to our listeners. That happens Tuesday nights around 6 o'clock. Very often it's Rich and our friend Brandon, and Darren will stop in. Sometimes they're
kind of the
potentially
Mr.
other people.
Of this, you know, right. Stop by and
comes in, zips up his sweater, and
you know. Not only that, I mean, part of the point of tonight's episode is to tell you what's really good right now, what I really like, and to try to convince you to come pick it up. But I want to point out to you, there's actually also a section on the website for something just like this. If you go to ParadoxCNC.com, there on our comics page, we should have a slideshow of good high-end books and all age groups that those books apply to. You can check out.
And we also did recently put up onto the website the slides from a presentation we've done a few times at a few of the conventions in town on how to get into reading comic books and... or is that the same thing you were talking about?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Well, we're talking about the exact same thing, but it serves a few different functions. It's a very, very good list with some great information about a lot of different books. So,
and we did a write-up, I don't know if that's up yet, but about getting started in reading comics.
Yeah, I don't remember if that's up either.
I don't think it is, because you, I had emailed it to you like a month earlier, and then you were like, oh yeah, I did find that, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, so it'll get up.
I'm pretty much fired. That's what's happening, yep. Guys. All right. So, let's go ahead and dive into this.
Hey, Josh. Sure.
Yeah, what's up, Rich?
Welcome to Paradox, little Josh Trumbo. Good to see you. What brings you back to the shop?
Well, I don't know. I saw the store. I heard it was really cool, and I thought maybe I'd stop in and just see what was what. You know, years ago, I got a comic book from my uncle. Mm. He's in jail now, but that has nothing to do with this. And it was really neat, but I haven't picked up a comic book since. And I thought maybe I'd come down and see what kind of comic books you have.
Well, little Josh Trumbo, that I somehow know your name.
Well, I haven't. It's on my shirt, you know, so in case I get lost, people will be able to find me.
Fair enough. You know, a lot of people put that in their underwear, but, you know.
That would make this conversation way weirder.
Really creepy, yeah. So. Well, we got a bunch of comics around. No, I don't know. I thought the role play would be fun.
It was a fun little play.
Yeah.
All right. We're dropping that, apparently.
So I gave Josh a list of books with no particular order. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I don't know, just pick something off there. And I'm going to tell you why you should read it.
All right. So, yeah, I'm just going to pick a couple of books. We'll fill up some time here.
It's either going to be fun or terrible. I have no idea.
It could be terribly fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start with this. I recently went to the cinema, and I saw a feature film.
Oh, did you?
Titled Shazam. This is not true. I actually haven't seen it yet.
That's what I thought.
I've heard it's quite good, but I haven't had time to see that one. But I saw this movie Shazam, and there's people are saying something about him being Captain Marvel, and I don't get it. Is there a comic book about this guy? He looks like he belongs in a comic book.
Why, yes, Josh. Shazam is a comic book. Yeah, actually, I mean, you know, Shazam was around as Captain Marvel back in the 1940s, actually. Billy Batson, I think, his first appearance is in, like, 1941. So, not exactly a brand new character or anything like that. But, yeah, you know, if you haven't seen the movie, that's unfortunate for the conversation, but a lot of times people will say, you know, I saw this really cool movie, but I come into the shop, where should I start? And sometimes there's an answer, but a lot of times you'll look on the shelves. On Free Comic Book Day, this actually happened. Mm-hmm. Some kids were looking around, young teenagers, and Marvel had released Savage Avengers #1. Hmm. So they were flipping through it on the new comic rack, looking for something to buy. And not one character is actually in the Avengers is on the cover of the Savage Avengers. And I actually heard one of the kids say something like, I wish I had quoted him. Or, I mean, I wish I could verbatim quote him. But essentially he said, I'm looking for somebody I recognize in this comic. Like, I'm not kidding. Yeah. It was like I could have, it's like I was making it up in my head. But it's like a thing that happened, right? But the thing about the Shazam comic that's actually just perfect, you don't ever have to have read a Shazam comic before in your life. You could pick up the current series of Shazam, we're on issue 5, I believe, mm-hmm. and you will feel like you picked up right where the movie ended off. You will exactly know everything you absolutely need to know. Billy Batson is, you get his full origin story in the Shazam movie, which is he's a little kid who ends up getting the powers of this mighty wizard the wizard is the last surviving member of a group of wizards who ran something or took care of something called the Rock of Eternity.
Is it on the coast?
It is.
Are they Wizards of the
Coast?
No,
yeah, nice. Well,
different company.
Yeah. So the wizard is trying to find a new champion. and several people have been rejected, and we actually see some of that. It kind of ties into the villain of the story. And but he eventually picks Billy. Well, Billy is he's a foster kid. Mm-hmm. What would you call it when you... You know, someone gave him up for adoption when he was a baby, right?
Sure. He was orphaned.
I think when he was like 4 years old, right? Actually. So, and in the movie, he's sort of searching for that parent and stuff like that. Well, you know, so we meet in the movie, we meet the other foster children, we meet the foster parents and the whole bit. And every single one of them are in the comic book. That's it.
Oh, nice.
Yep, exactly. And there's no, it is as fresh a start as possible. The first issue of the comic gives you a nice brief retelling of the origin I just told you, mm-hmm. but that, because that's not all. This is a spoiler for the movie, so Josh, I apologize.
That's all right. It's been a month or two, so I've had my chance.
By the end of the movie, all the other foster kids also have one of the powers that Shazam has. So Shazam stands for, it's, what is it, six letters? Each of the letters actually stands for a famous mythological person.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Solomon, Hercules, Atlas, Zeus, Ares, and Mercury, or something like that. I'm probably off on one of those. Somebody can correct me if you're watching. Yeah. But, so what happens is, Billy has all those powers, so he's incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen the movie Big, it's like Big with superpowers, basically, you know.
Right.
But, during the climax of the movie, he also imparts one of each of his powers to the other foster kids, so they all have got one of his powers.
Hmm.
It's basically the comic is just picks up immediately after that. One of the really cool things in the first issue of the comic, too, is there's a backstory about Mary Marvel, or Mary, now they have to, yeah, it's weird. She used to be Mary Marvel, now they have to call her, like, Mary Shazam, which is a dumb name. But but I suppose you can't really call him Captain Marvel at this point. So.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's set in Philadelphia. And, you know, the nice thing about the movie, you get this full character arc for Billy. And again, you know, at the end of the movie, he's coming to pick up Shazam. So what's going on in Shazam is the kids all go back to the Rock of Eternity, and there's these gateways to other realms. And they're supposed to be closed off because there's one called the Monster Lands. And guess what? We don't want the Monster Lands to come messing around with anybody, right? Hmm. So, yeah. But we discover, which I don't believe we knew this before, is there were other lands also. There's the Game Lands, the Wild Lands, Fun Land. And so one of the kids wants to go to Fun Land, you know, and so they
sounds
do
like
that.
A fun place.
Yeah, exactly. And you go there, and it's like a paradise. It's like a kid's paradise. There's all these amusement parks and endless, you know, ice cream shops and, you know, so on and so forth. It's just idyllic. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's a darker secret behind it that you learn through the course of the story. So, you know, there you go. I mean, that's basically the book. It's written by Jeff Johns.
Mm-hmm.
Many of you know Jeff Johns is one of the architects of DC's comics and you know, movie and TV. I mean, when Jeff Johns writes something, you stand up and notice, you know? So, I can't really say enough good things about it. It's really good art by Dale Eaglesham. The bottom line, you know, the book is super fun. It's a comic book's comic book. If you're somebody who... You know, I mean, I could see, you know, if Old Man or if Logan was your favorite comic movie of all time and The Punisher is your favorite character, you know, mm-hmm. it's very possible Shazam's not going to be the book for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know, if you have a heart and a soul, then, you know, then, no, I love The Punisher also. So, but, you know, that's what Shazam is. Comedy, character, adventure. To some degree... As much as I called the movie Big with Superpowers, it's a lot like The Goonies.
Hmm.
For all the Goonies with superpowers.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, I love it.
There you go. Goonies with superpowers. I think that's a pretty good way to sell it. All right. So Shazam sounds good. I got some more that I'm looking at on the show. I'm going back to our little play we did earlier. There's more on the racks here that look interesting. You know, so let's jump over. There's I've heard of the Incredible Hulk, But now there's this immortal Hulk. What's the difference between these two guys? Why should I care about this immortal Hulk? Like, if he can't die, what's the point?
Before I answer that, because I just want to know who Josh Trumbo is. What did you think of that Shazam con? Did that sound interesting to you?
That does sound interesting to me. That does. I like a few things about it, even though I haven't actually seen the movie.
Yeah, that's okay.
I like that it picks up. That's a smart way to do it. Because a lot of the other comic books that have characters who are in feature films right now don't necessarily have that. I mean, they've got their own continuity that they're keeping up with. And, you know, if I go and pick up a Captain Marvel book, because why not? We're talking about Captain Marvel, who is now Shazam, it's not quite going to be the same thing that I just saw in the theater, because there's a lot of other stuff going on there, and the story's a bit different in its telling and whatnot. So I think that sounds really smart, especially with a character and a movie that was, maybe I'm wrong in this, but it may be geared a little bit more towards kids. Not that the other movies and things aren't appealing to viewers of all ages, but it seems like that one has a bit more of the fun factor.
Kind of, but it's a little darker than you would think. I'm not sure every kid would actually do well at that movie. So.
No. Well, you know, there's a lot of movies, that, you know, like Harry Potter series is one that gets very dark as it goes. And, you know, so that's Grimm's Fairy Tales, for goodness sake. So
True, yes.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to say that it's, you know, kiddie or whatever, but it definitely seems, especially considering the movies DC has put out, it has seemed to have a bit more of that lighthearted, you know, less really heavy sort of things going on.
Yep, yep.
But yeah, I mean, that and... It's an interesting concept, like, you know, that there's like the one dude who has all the powers and then a bunch of his buddies who have one power each. That seems like that could have a really interesting dynamic.
Yep, yep. Well, okay, so Immortal Hulk. It's just a big gear shift. That's why I kind of wanted to know, what your reaction to Shazam was. So, no, so Immortal Hulk is not a different person. It's Bruce Banner Hulk.
Okay.
So, a few years back, this is actually one of the things I love about this. So, I used to have a lot of debates with a friend of mine about when things went wrong in comics, whether you should snap your fingers to fix things, or whether you should try to write your way out of them. Mm-hmm. And because in life you don't get to snap your fingers usually, you have to work your way out of the things that have gone wrong. And so, he was always a fan of that. I was much more. Who cares? Just fix it now in person. But a few years back, Bruce Banner, it was actually during Secret Wars 2. Mm-hmm. Bruce Banner arranged to have himself killed if he ever went wild again and became the Hulk.
Okay.
And so he designed an arrow for Hawkeye to use that would kill him.
Right.
And Hawkeye did use it and theoretically killed him. So this is the concept of Immortal Hulk, is that Bruce Banner died, you know, except that it's basically that he can't die. He isn't even able to kill himself to stop the Hulk. Mm-hmm. The Hulk is just a monster that keeps coming no matter what. And what happens when you come back from the dead and you're still the Hulk? You know, when you thought the one out you would always have was if I could just kill myself.
Right.
Then it would be over. The horror would end, you know. And now you find out, even more horrifically, that you can't even end the horror. It just keeps going and going. And that's sort of where I saw the book at the beginning. The book opened up, we're on issue 16. The book opened up with these one-shot stories about Bruce traveling around the country. It played off of the 1970s Hulk TV show. Okay. Have you ever seen it? They introduced a female version of Jack McGee, the reporter, Jackie McGee, and they put us in a Bruce Banner traveling around. Everybody thought he was dead. Nobody knew that he was back alive. And except for Jackie thought she picked up some reports. She worked for a smaller newspaper, and they thought there was a way that if they could break that story, they would become a famous newspaper. And so they put her on a plane and sent her off after him. And, you know, each issue is sort of an exploration monster story. So that was like going back to the roots of the Hulk comics. Because the original Hulk comic, he was essentially a sort of a werewolf type monster where he would turn into the Gray Hulk at night. You know, Incredible Hulk number one, he's gray. And it's later that they turn him into the Green Hulk. And so, you know, that this really harkened back to that. And they were morality plays. The very first issue is a story about someone who commits a liquor store holdup and kills someone in the process, kills a little girl, and already has to deal with that himself. And then what would happen if the Hulk confronted that person, just a normal person? You know, it was awesome. It was just a great issue. And there's all these metaphor or imagery early issues about mirrors, the Hulk looking back at himself, and then we get this hint by issue 4 or 5 of this green door. They keep calling it the green door opened. And at first I thought it was sort of a reference to this mirror image that they were coming up with or whatever, you know, or that was like Bruce is over here when the green door opens, the Hulk appears or whatever. Mm-hmm. But throughout the story, this is where this has become a Hulk mythology defining series. And sometimes this is dangerous, but Al Ewing is absolutely killing it. But what we find out is that gamma radiation is not just something that can be identified scientifically, but it's something that magically, it has some sort of inexplicable element to it that, for all intents and purposes, could be considered magical. So there's a creature in the Marvel Universe, Mephisto has been the ruler of hell. But there's someone below him. There's a figure called One Below All. And the green door opens to One Below All's realm. And so when the gamma bomb went off that created Bruce Banner, it opened that green door. And there's even stuff that goes back to pre his origin. But it's like these gamma monsters are being created or you know, feeding off this gamma energy that is tied to this, you know, ultimately evil One Below All monster. And it just all builds up to issue 12 and 13 when we get a whole bunch of revelations about this and goes on from there. So it's a monster book. It's a pure horror comic. Yeah. And at its best, it is absolutely a morality play horror comic. And it is incredible character depth for Bruce Banner and building a whole new world around him. We're going back to Doc Samson. We're going back to Betty Banner. We're going back to, you know, all the characters that have been around in Hulk mythology, but we're sort of rebuilding their stories and the foundation of what I assume is going to be some huge, like, 50-issue arc. Because you can see where they're going, where they've introduced this idea of One Below All. They've introduced the idea that anybody gamma irradiated is going to be somehow connected to him. And so at some point, presumably, you know, One Below All will open the green door and invade Earth, and they'll fight back against him. I mean, you can guess in some way where it's going to go. But yeah, I mean, there are times you read these issues and they're just chillingly horrific. And just really strike that deep chord in you that, you know, that really good stuff can do. So, wow. Yeah, I mean, the book's phenomenal. So
that's, I wouldn't have expected that.
Exactly. I mean, that's really cool. Nobody did. And, you know, Jeff Jones, going back to Shazam, Jeff Jones is a person who actually he's managed to take characters, especially he would do this in the 90s and 2000s. He made his name by redefining a DC B-list, C-list character, taking them and making them into a really cool concept, you know? And it's like, that's what Al Ewing already started with a great comic. The Hulk's a great concept. But after like 50 years of the Hulk, I mean, it can get boring. Oh, I'm getting chased by tanks or, you know, like there's what one thing that Al Ewing is also doing is over the years, there have been all these different takes on the Hulk and he's incorporating them all into the.
All right. Audio seems to be fixed. For now.
Sorry about that. Go internet.
Yeah, that's.
that thing's new. They need to keep working on that.
That's so. Right. All right, so we were talking about, I was saying that
A lot of things, and I pardon me if this is a little bit of a repeat, but you know, for about 20 years, one of the things we like to do is we try to like to tell the overarching explanation of everything that ever happened to the character. So,
yeah, but it seems like they're doing that in a very good way in this book. Like they're touching on the important stuff. They're adding to the mythos.
Yep.
So that sounds a lot more interesting than I would have given it credit for, because I've always. You know, at least I really do like the way they portray the Hulk in the movies. I've liked the stuff they've done with him there. I haven't ever really read the comic book, but it's never really grabbed me the way that some of the other stories and books have.
Yep.
But that sounds very intriguing.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's a comic, it's monster story, it's horror story, and it's got a greater significance that just continues to build on itself. So it's absolutely one of the most must-read books. On the sales charts, this book is challenging Batman for sales right now. Like, that's how significant this book is in the industry. So
wow.
We covered two books in a lot of our time, so
Let's talk. Let's maybe go down the list a little bit, and then we'll focus on one final book.
Okay.
But I just want to make sure we get more of this list out there, so people know, you know, at least what you're reading. For me personally, I just pick up a couple of books right now, and among them are Venom, and I'm grabbing Guardians of the Galaxy. Both are Donny Cates penned books.
Yeah, in both of those, did I put Guardians on my list?
You did put Guardians on there.
Yeah. So the thing is, I really Venom. The only reason Venom isn't there is Cates took a couple issue break. And that book got really controversial on him. I loved it. I think every issue has been good, and I don't know what people are complaining about.
Yeah, I didn't see what the controversy was on that. I just heard that there was some.
Oh my god, how dare you do really good storytelling in my Venom comic.
Right.
I'm reading Venom comic. I don't want good storytelling. Come on now. I mean, that seems to be the complaint as far as I can tell. So. That's,
yeah, well, he gets kind of separated from the symbiote
a lot of stuff happens. You know, it's very significant.
But I'm sure that's a big part. It's like, man, isn't he, he's not really Venom anymore. It's like, well, you know, that's kind of part of the point.
And I can't remember if I put Guardians on the list. If I didn't. Yeah, I think Guardians, so I'd say much like with Shazam, if you have never read a comic before in your life, or if you've never read a Guardians comic before in your life, who cares? Guardians, the current story going on, is virtually like this. It could be Guardians of the Galaxy 3 set after the end of Endgame. I mean, it just absolutely could, you know. Thanos is dead. Sorry, spoilers, internet. But he is uploaded his consciousness and needs a body. And so there's basically this giant race between people who are trying to stop that from happening and people who are trying to make it happen. You know, the Black Order and so on and so forth, you know.
Yeah.
And the universe is, all the forces of the universe are stirring. In the meantime, we have the Guardians sort of stuck right in the middle of that. And the only thing I'd say about this book, there's clearly been continuity I'm not even familiar with that's happened, because Rocket's not there, Groot can talk, like there are different things going on than what I know about, right? But I think that book is fantastic. It's really good. Jeff Shaw's art, you know, it's Jeff Shaw and Donny Cates from Thanos Wins and God Country. And it's really good. So
yeah, definitely, I would recommend picking that up as well.
That Shazam sort of, like, who cares? Just read it.
Come
in by number one. You don't need to know anything. So okay,
exactly. All right, so let's. I'll just kind of go down the list, and if you can give like a one or two sentence pitch, right, for each of the books, we'll put you on the spot here, and. That'll be a good list of Rich Early's current top books that are out there. So, you have Green Lantern.
Yeah, I mean, Grant Morrison, that's my one sentence pitch.
There you go.
So it is spectacular. Look, I grew up on 1970s goofy science fiction, okay? Mm-hmm. I grew up on science fiction comics from the 1970s. And this is in some ways an homage. And I don't tell you that to scare you off. If that is like, well, that sounds dumb. You know, like, that's not why I'm saying that at all. So, oh no, my thing broke and my thing's missing.
Oh no.
Ooh, that could be bad. Sorry, internet.
if you're just listening to the podcast later, Rich's thing broke and the thing fell off.
Yeah. So, what the heck? That concerns me greatly. Sorry, but it is a standalone Green Lantern story. You don't need any Green Lantern continuity. I don't think it will tie into any. It's going to be, you know, it's its own thing. Grant Morrison would not be interested in doing that, you know. But it is an epic space story about Hal Jordan having to infiltrate an organization threatening the Guardians. And it's, I mean, the book's just great. You know, it's space fantasy. So, sorry, last thing. If Grant Morrison scares you off because you think Grant Morrison equals weird magical stuff that I don't understand, yep, totally get that. However, what he's done is he's applied it to the weird space stuff. And so instead of like incomprehensible magical levels of stuff, it's just like weird aliens and stuff like that. So it's an entirely readable thing, you know, like it's great. It's great high space fantasy set in the DCU. It's just a classic.
Excellent.
Modern classic.
All right, next on the list there, Gideon Falls.
Yep, do you like Twin Peaks?
I do.
Okay, you like Gideon Falls. I mean, Gideon Falls is an unabashed homage to Twin Peaks and everything like it. All the pieces, the playbook are there. Instead of the Red Lodge, there's a thing called the Black Barn. A minister comes to a small town. There's been a murder. You find out there's a history of these murders, and there's all kinds of weird stuff going on. There's a guy digging through the garbage because he's convinced that the secrets behind everything that's happened in this town can be found in the garbage, and that all just slowly builds. And again, like I said, the Hulk was horror. This is pure, unadulterated Twin Peaks horror. So, nice. And look, you cannot talk about this book. It's a Jeff Lemire comic. And a lot of you know what that means. But Andrea Sorrentino is doing some of the best art that's ever been done in comic books. And the reason I will say that dramatically is it's not just the pencils. They have taken the layouts of this book because it wavers between concrete reality and crazy alternate reality, wherever this is all taking place, where the horror is. And there are these ways that they do these shattered pages. They do this incredible detail, like when people are studying things, the lines on the newspaper can be seen, you know, like the...
Oh, wow.
But, and that's just the beginning of the layered richness. The panel design changes depending on where and who we're with. The book is amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Must read. We're on issue 13. There's two trades. Come down and get this book. You know, I don't care. You can hate spandex all you want. This is the book you should be reading. So,
all right. Then we have Batman and also Batman Who Laughs.
Yeah, I mean, Batman is a continued Tom King run. I don't need to say a ton about this. This is where issue 50 was the wedding issue, stand-up issue. We are coming up to issue 75. It's a 100-issue run. Something is about to happen and change again. I mean, since the wedding, Batman has been dealing with these repercussions of why did she leave me. What we've found out is that Bane orchestrated everything. He's trying to break Batman in a mental way, not just a physical way. Most people are familiar with the classic Bane breaking Batman's back comics from way back in the day, but this is Bane on a whole new level.
Control of your city, girl.
Yeah, but it goes all the way back to, actually, the current story arc is called City of Bane, ironically, but it goes all the way back to the very first two story arcs of Tom King's run, issues 1 through 12, and why Bane is out for revenge against Batman has been building this entire series. It is one of the ultimate Batman epics ever written, and it's definitely different. It's not just Batman fights a villain every issue. We can go whole chunks of issues with Batman fighting nobody, so...
I like how you say you don't have much to say about it. And then,
well, yeah, no, sorry. And then Batman Who Laughs is Scott Snyder and Jock telling his stories. The Batman Who Laughs comes from Dark Knight's Metal, but who cares about that? It is a version of Batman who killed the Joker. But when he killed the Joker had the ultimate system to get revenge, which was there was a toxin in his heart, and when his heart stopped, it went into Batman and turned Batman into the Joker. But Batman doesn't just become the Joker, he becomes like a Jokerized version of Batman. So he still wants to save Gotham City and protect people, but he loses all morality. He'll do literally anything, you know. So that Batman has come to our Earth and is stalking our Bruce. And there's this really cool thing where he's bringing alternate reality versions of Bruce Wayne and killing them here in Gotham City. And so Commissioner Gordon keeps finding dead Bruce Waynes from alternate realities who have all got some different version of their lives. So, and it's the book is just a total descent into madness. It is a tour de force by Scott Snyder and Jock. It might be the best comic on the shelf, and there's a lot of really good comics on the shelf.
Wow. All right.
Pure horror once again. So.
Nice. All right, just a few more on the list here, and then we got to wrap it up as well.
Yep.
Give me a quick thing on Justice League. I saw the movie and I hated it.
Because the movie was terrible. Justice League is going through, there have been, you know, we're on probably like volume 7 or 8 or something like that in Justice League. Scott Snyder, once again, is doing a huge Justice League epic like almost never seen before. It started in issue 1. We're about to come up on issue 25. It's still building. The Luthor and all the bad guys have gathered together in sort of a Legion of Doom. If you remember the old Super Friends TV show. But they're after 7 cosmic forces that, if put together, will unlock a dark secret behind the universe. And the Justice League are trying to stop them. And they've been through everything. We've gone through all this gigantic stuff with Hawkworld and with Aquaman and all these different forces. Like, there's the Flash has the Speed Force, and there's a thing called the Still Force, which stops motion. And every arc so far has dealt with one of these things. And now what we've gotten into is the very mythology of the DC Universe. So if you're a fan of like Crisis on Infinite Earths and all that big stuff, that's what we're dealing with now, is like, what is the true origin of the DC Universe? Who was around before it? Who created it? And we've introduced a new characters on a level with the Monitor and Anti-Monitor. So, wow. Yeah, the book's great. I mean, it's a comic book fan's comic book. If you don't like decompressed storytelling, I mean, one thing Gideon Falls is a little guilty of is being more written for the trade than the individual comic. It's worth every penny. It should read every issue. But this is chock full of dialogue and plot and minutia and all the stuff. And it's like written like a 1960s Justice League comic in that way. And it is an homage to a love letter to classic DC comics and characters. And it's, again, worth every penny. The book is delicious. I can't get enough.
All right. East of West.
Yep. So Jonathan Hickman. This really is probably the best book on the stand. So this is the gigantic Jonathan Hickman in epic that has been going on. We're in the end game of this one. No pun intended. Or no reference to future podcasts. But it is every issue is a puzzle piece for one giant story. The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse have come to Earth to bring about the end of the world. However, the world is not what you know. It is very much a Game of Thrones world where North America has been turned into almost like a Westeros. So at the end of the Civil War, things didn't end as they do in our history. So that's so it's like alternate history meets the apocalypse. And what happened instead was 7 nations are created on the North American continent. There is a Union, and a South, basically, but like New Orleans and the coast become a oil baron kingdom, literally with a king and princes and all kinds of storylines there. The middle of the country is called the Endless Nation, and it's the Native American area, but they have technology. They still honor all the sort of Native American traditions, but they also are a technological force. Texas is its own republic by itself, and the West Coast is ruled by the Chinese. It's the Republic of Mao, led by Mao's daughter. And so there are agents in every one of these realms trying to bring about the apocalypse. They'll work for the Horsemen. Last kicker, Death, the Horseman Death, has left the Four Horsemen. He fell in love with Chairman Mao's daughter, who leads the the Republic of Mao. They had a child. Well, their child is believed by the rest of the Horsemen to be the Beast. To be the 666. But, of course, Mao and Death don't want to just give their son up to be, to be Satan reincarnated, you know.
Right.
And the story's just, it's just so amazing. It is, if you love going to these big puzzle piece, massive blockbuster ongoing TV, like, imagine Lost meets Game of Thrones or something, you know, along those lines. There you go. So.
All right. There's 2 left on the thing here. Hit me up with some Doomsday Clock.
Doomsday Clock. I'll leave that real short. So, yeah. Doomsday Clock is the sequel to Watchmen. It's 5 years later. It is tied into the MCU, or to the DCU, sorry, not the MCU, in a way that clearly the Watchmen HBO trailer is not. That's going to be its own separate thing. But yes, like, Dr. Manhattan at the end of Watchmen leaves, and he leaves where he goes. We find out he goes to the DCU, and 5 years later, things have fallen apart on the Watchmen Earth, and Ozymandias goes looking for Manhattan, and the story unfolds from there. There's a giant superhero fight, all kinds of stuff. Jeff Johns, Gary Frank. I mean, if you're not reading this book, come down, buy it. You should read it. It's like the modern day epic sequel to Watchmen. So
excellent.
It's actually, I mean, it's good. It manages to be its own thing despite having to be said to be the sequel to Watchmen. You know, like, sure. It does manage to be its own thing in a way that the before Watchmen stuff didn't really manage to do. So,
All right. And then last on the list, you have Naomi.
Yeah, so Naomi is, this is an amazing little book. Brian Michael Bendis, this book was so overlooked. The first issue had a print run of like 25,000 copies, which is nothing. It's one of the biggest speculator books we've ever seen in the industry. The day before comics issues even come out, they sell for 15, 20, 25 bucks online. And they're not even in stands yet. So Naomi is a young 17-year-old girl who has, at the beginning of the book, seems to have no powers whatsoever. She lives in small-town middle America, and there's an incident where Superman is fighting a villain, and they crash into the town. And it'd be like in Fargo, all of a sudden, you know, like, boom, yeah. Superman is having a fight near the Fargo Dome, you know. And smaller than that, it's not even as big as Fargo, but you get the idea, right?
Yeah.
Well, this sets Naomi on this course, and there's this great moment in the first issue where she didn't see any of it. And she's talking to her friends by text and stuff like that, and she goes, for the rest of my life, I have to be the one who didn't get to see it. I'm stuck with that, right? And then everybody's like, why are you so obsessed with this? And she says, because he's adopted and accepted. And so, like, it's great because through dialogue, he lets us know that Naomi is adopted and isn't happy about it, right?
Yeah.
And he doesn't tell us that. He shows it to us, you know?
Nice.
And then she spends the rest of the book. What she finds out is that there was an incident in that town on the day she was adopted 17 years earlier. And so she becomes obsessed with what happened. Who am I? You know, like, then I must be the key to this. And she may be, we're finding out something in the next issue, but they twist the Superman mythology during the course of the series, you know, and like, it's just an amazing book. It's a really good character story. It's Brian Michael Bendis creating a new character in the DCU, much like he did with, say, Jessica Jones and characters like
that.
So top notch work.
Excellent. So there you go, guys. There are a lot of books there that are on Rich's list, very highly recommended, and you have a good starting basis for what's in them, so you can kind of choose and take a look. And like we mentioned earlier, every Tuesday night at 6 o'clock, we have the Paradox Comics Show, where Rich and friends talk about other comic books, or the comic books that are coming out on Wednesday, and ones that have been out. So plenty of opportunity there to learn more about comics and get your interests all interested. So that you
don't want to know what broke. I have this necklace I've had for a long time that has a little ruby Superman, you know, symbol. And the necklace is broken and the symbol's gone. So that's not good.
Well, hopefully it's just on the floor here somewhere. We'll do some soul searching and some necklace searching here.
Yep.
But right now we're going to bring this podcast to a close so we can get to our next one. Thank you, folks, for tuning in. Thanks for everyone who was hanging out with me in the chat there as we talked about a few things. And we do put these episodes up on our website every Monday. So we record in a block like we're doing tonight, and then we'll put them up over the coming weeks. So you can check them out there as well on twitch.tv/ParadoxCNC and on our Facebook page. So our website is ParadoxCNC.com. It's like ParadoxComicsNCards.com. And you can find us on Twitter at ParadoxCNC, Instagram, it's Paradox CNC, and we hope that you will tune in for more podcasts. We hope you'll come down to the store and try some of these awesome books that are on the shelves. And, of course, we plan to see you on the next DoxCast.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time, geek on.